Hello, hello, hello. I'm feeling better. I still got a lingering cough, but I'm feeling much better. I'm so sorry about last week, everyone. The flu just absolutely finished me. And as such, there was too much to do and not enough hours in the day. But I'm back. And actually, this week, I'm back with a guest. I'm really excited for you to hear what he has to say. He's such a brilliant speaker, I think, and he's got a really refreshing and healthy attitude towards the industry and the people that he's worked with. And I just think you are very lucky to be able to delve into the way his mind works for a brief spell. So without further ado, today you will be hearing from my good friend Vincent Jerome. Vincent Jerome is a London-based artist with a degree in performing arts from the London Metropolitan University. Since working in theatre venues, he has gone on to act in films such as Transformers: The Last Knight and Wonder Woman 1984. He has written, produced and starred in two award-winning short films and has various upcoming film and TV roles, including a lead role in the BBC revival of beloved school drama Waterloo Road. Man like Lyndon King. I can't wait. He is an advocate for diversity and inclusion in the entertainment industry and recently became an ambassador for the Anna Fiorentini Performing Arts School for Young People based in East London. I am so excited for you to hear from Vince. It's so exciting to hear from someone at the point where they're about to blow, because Waterloo Road is coming out in January or in the new year. The first look images have just been released this week, I think it was. And yeah, he is a star in the making. He's a star, not even in the making. He just is, because, you know, we've all been out here for a hot minute. So let's get on into it. I hope you enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side. This is In the Room with Adele James. And here is the unfiltered version of Vincent Jerome's story.
Recording.
Boom. Amazing. Thank you so much for doing that. You've saved the day. Hi, Vince. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, my God. My pleasure. I love this podcast so much.
No, get out of here. Don't gas me up.
No, honestly. I'm not gassing no one or nothing. I'm just telling you the truth, like, as I see it. You know what I mean? So that's just...
Go on, have a sip of your London nootropics.
Yeah, mojo.
How is it?
Oh, it's lovely. I'm a coffee guy, man. Like, that's nice. That's nice.
They're so smooth, I find. Mm. And with oat milk, it's the absolute best combination. Yeah.
They're just the right strength as well. Like, I like a strong coffee. Not like, sorry, Cafe Nero, but... Sorry.
Shots fired.
No, it's just, you know what it is. Our good friend Sam Benjamin is a Cafe Nero guy. Whenever we go there, I'm like, okay, it just tastes like the beans are burnt. I don't know if that's the way that the beans are supposed to come, but it's always like, it's just tart. Tart?
Yeah.
Tart, yes, tart.
It's an acquired taste.
Yeah. Sorry, Cafe Nero. 2 minutes and I already put someone on blast. London nootropics.
Yeah, it's really nice. And mojo, I find mojo really good for concentration, even though it's really, they recommend it for like physical activity and physical endurance. Mm-hmm. So exercise, essentially. Yeah.
Real?
Yeah.
I wish you would have told me that and I would have saved that one for tomorrow.
I'll give you another one. Don't worry. You can have another one. Or you can order them on londonnootropics.com.
Using the code Adele J, and you get 15% off.
You have been listening to the podcast, haven't you? Oh, hilarious. Okay, all right, enough coffee chat. What I really want to ask is,
yeah,
how are you? How's the present moment? How are things going for you right about now?
Today, good. Today's a good day, yeah. I just want to kind of come in here with the same like generosity of spirit that you have every single episode. And this, so yeah, I'm just here. I'm here for it. And it's weird that I haven't seen you in ages. Cause as I said, it feels like I've always see you. But again, that's the myth of social media. But anyway, to answer your question, I'm good. Today's a good day.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. The myth of social media is so real. I feel like at the moment. Yeah. I see you and Sam Benjamin is so famous on this podcast. So like every single week I end up talking about Sam Benjamin somehow.
I mean, he's quite the presence. He's quite the, you know, Sam's one of my best friends. So, you know, I can't not mention. And he's a frequent collaborator as well.
Absolutely.
As we will probably talk about at some point.
Well, we're going to talk about it right now because that's okay. Why I'm seeing you all the time. I mean, apart from the fact that, of course, your casting in Waterloo Road has come out. Mm-hmm. Gosh, actually, it feels like ages ago that came out.
That was February. That was the, I think that was first. I think the second, no, second week of February.
That's mad. This year has been long.
Has it?
This year has felt really long for me.
Oh, okay. No, I appreciate that. I feel the opposite, but I can understand that.
Oh, really?
Not everybody. Yeah. Because everything's, you know, with the show, everything is new. The process of doing a show like this is new. You know, a lot of my CV is film, independent or otherwise, and theatre. So, mm-hmm. And I've done bits of TV, but like being in every single episode. And for the first 7 episodes, like my character, Lyndon King, hashtag Lyndon King, he features quite prominent. Like, you know, Lyndon's one of the new teachers that you get to know very quickly. Seemingly, you're introduced to very quickly. I can't say you get to know him very quickly. I think you get to know him over time.
Oh, I feel like there's a spoiler in there. We'll be careful.
Not really. No. I just think he goes places. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
He develops. And that's what you want from a character. You want
absolutely
some development. Yeah. So, anyway, back to what we were saying. Yeah. Just because everything's new, as I said, being in every single episode, not living in London, everything was just a bit of a trip, and you know waiting for schedules to come out and then getting scripts and then getting amendments and da 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 and all this kind of stuff. So it was for a long time, it was like it was kind of like, you know, Indiana Jones when he's running away from the boulder.
Yeah, man.
It was like that. It was just like, keep it moving or you go and get crushed.
Yeah.
So but yeah, it's been great. So because of that, my year feels very short. Feels like 6 months.
Fair. You know, I can totally relate to that actually, because when I was on Casualty, it was exactly that, especially because they're literally filming all year round, constantly. You're like constantly chasing your tail. And we shoot in Cardiff. And so the travel I found also kind of truncated time for me, like being backwards and forwards. Whereas this year, my work has been a lot more kind of all over the place. I've gone back to that like freelance headspace where it's like, oh, I don't know what's happening in 5 minutes, but I guess we'll find out when we get there. So yeah, I think that's a really astute observation as to why this year has felt faster. And I'm glad as well, because what an amazing opportunity. And you've got another film coming out really soon, which is why I said I've been seeing you all over the shop, because the trailer dropped, was it? Yesterday?
This morning.
It was this morning? What
yeah,
day is it?
It's Friday today.
Oh my goodness.
It's Thursday. because you know what it is? We've seen the thing that Hollywood does where it's like teasers for the trailer.
Yeah.
So, the trailer dropped this morning.
Amazing. And that would be for the feature film, The Payday, which was made by Kyla Fry and Sam Benjamin, starring your lovely self and those two.
And those two, directed by Sam Bradford as well. Yes. I have to give Sam Bradford and the Praxima boys a shout out as well.
Big time. Because you guys have collaborated, actually the four of you have collaborated a few times, haven't you?
Yeah. I don't know if, definitely me,
Sam and Sam
have. So for the listeners, so I'm going to call them Bradford, which is the director, and Benjamin, which is the actor. So, me and Sam Benjamin, have been friends for a long time, and we have definitely done the most collaboration out of the four of us.
Yeah.
Actually, it might be a tie, because I actually wrote and produced a short film with Sam Bradford. He directed it and co-produced it as well. So, it's just like family. And the great thing about those guys, Kyla included, they just get bleep done. they just get stuff done and they don't mess around. I remember me and Sam Benjamin were talking about writing something together during the winter lockdown, which went from 2020 into 2021, the one that just kicked the crap out of loads of people, myself included. And we would go and say, okay, we could try this, did this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this. And I think the need to create, I mean, The Payday is kind of like a spiritual successor to the film that they did, which has just, the name has just escaped me, which is terrible. The one with him and Kyla, oh my God, why can't
on
I
Amazon
remember?
Prime?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, now it's gone out of my head.
Oh my gosh, Sam, I'm so sorry, bro. I've totally forgotten. Anyway, so they did a short together, which was like a crime caper. Sam Bradford directed it. And The Payday is, as I said, like a spiritual successor to that. And again, it's just the kind of the guts and just the, not brash, the, just the boldness of those guys to be like, we have an idea. We want to get it done. How much is it going to cost to do X, Y, and Z? Who can we get in? And it's just, they just pull their resources and they just, it really is that true independent film spirit, which I love and I came up in. And so more than anything, I'm very proud to support them. Even when I got told the news that it's going to get distributed, I think November the 11th in the States, and I can't remember the date in December for the UK. When I got told that, I was like, that's mad, because we were shooting it this time last year.
That's a very fast turnaround.
Yeah, 100%. But this is what I'm saying about those guys. They just get it done.
Yeah.
And you can't not love and respect them for that. And I'm just, you know, very grateful to be, you know, to come along for the ride. And also, I don't think I've said this to Sam Benjamin, but I've definitely said this to Sam Bradford. Sam Benjamin messed up because he wrote, in my opinion, the dopest character and gave it to me. I love Big Al. That's the character I play, because he's like an apex predator. Me and Sam Bradford were talking about characterization before we started filming, and he was like, yeah, I can't imagine him like, he doesn't talk like this. His voice is not high-pitched like that. I don't know why I did that. he was like, I can't imagine him like a shark, always moving forward. And I was like, yep. Because it's just something, I was just a force of nature. And I was like, oh, I could have fun with this. I have no responsibility to carry the narrative. And I could just come in, do my thing, leave, come back, do a little bit more, and boom, gone. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, that's the reason why I got into acting in the first place. I like character actors. You know what I mean? Like, that's my jam. Like, when people just come in, do the thing, and then leave. You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong, leading man stuff is fantastic, but it's, you know, I my favorite actors coming up were like Gary Oldman and Jeffrey Wright. Do you know what I mean? And even though Lawrence Fishburne is very much a leading man, he would pop up in things, you know, whether it's Higher Learning or, yes, he was the leading man in What's Love Got to Do with It, but like, do you know what I mean?
He's a bit of both, really, isn't he?
Yeah. Someone else who, like, if I look at their career, I'm like, yo, you got it down, bruv. Joel Edgerton.
Yeah.
Because he does it both as well. He can be a lead or a co-lead like he was in Warrior, but then he could be in something like Midnight Special with Michael Shannon, and then he could be the lead in like Lovin', and then he could be, I've done this totally out of sync, but like, then he can be like the kind of supporting / antagonist in Gatsby. And I was like, yo, man, you've cracked it.
He's finessed it. He's absolutely. And you know what? There's so much to be said for not having to carry the show.
Mm.
Like, looking back over what I've done, I think I've done a bit of a mixture of kind of lead and supporting lead. And obviously it's always a pleasure. I think it's a big ego stroke to be given a leading role in something. It kind of goes without saying. And I think a lot of people would kind of accredit a lead role to being more successful in some kind of way. Mm. But actually, you've described it so perfectly. Being able to go in, do your thing, get out and leave an impression. I think that's so impressive. A lot of my favorite performances that I can think of off the top of my head are of actors who did not carry the film or the show, but who carried the film or the show just from their little kind of cameos, I suppose.
Even to like, just to expand on that a little bit more. So I used to work in, actors have part-time jobs and stuff. I used to work in a very prestigious London cinema, which will remain nameless. And so I used to work for the cinema, and the film had gone in. It's one of those cinemas that only has like one screen. The film had gone in, and we were doing all bits, like bits of cleaning and so on and so forth. And then this guy comes up the stairs and he bolts straight to the toilet. And then I was like, oh, I know who that is. Anyway, everyone else is doing their thing. They don't take any notice of this guy. So I'm just knocking around and I'm like, hey, man, just so you know, you can't go through this exit now because the film started. So I need to take you a different way. You could still get in and see the film. You just can't go this way. And he was like, oh, okay, cool. And so I began to tell him. So, and there was a long walk to where he needed to get to. So I was like, I'm going to enjoy this. And I was like, so let me tell you a story. And he probably thought, like, who is you? And I was like, when I was a kid, my dad bought me a bootleg VHS. A VHS tape of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie. Like, the first one. And I remember watching it. And I remember seeing this guy in it. And he's got, like, two scenes. But the guy was magnetic. And I was one of those kids that used to watch films religiously. So I would know all the lines to everything, my favorite films. I'd know the lines. If it came on right now, I'd probably be able to do the whole Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. that and Batman Forever. but yeah, so I remember seeing this guy and I was like, who is that guy? And then years later, it turned out to be you. And the guy I was talking to was Sam Rockwell.
Mad.
And he laughed and he was like, oh, thanks, man, blah, blah, blah. But it's that thing. It's like, as a kid, don't get me wrong, I was a film fan before I ever had any inclination of becoming an actor. As a kid watching that film, I'm watching it for the turtles. Do you know what I mean? Straight up, I'm watching it for the turtles. And I even went in with a favorite turtle and came out with a different favorite turtle.
So but, fickle.
Oh, no, but, oh, man, that film. Raphael's a bad man. That's what I'm going to say.
Was he the one that you...
No, I went in, like I went in Michelangelo. Because in Michelangelo, you're a kid and he's all fun and all the rest of that. And I came out being like, hey, Raphael is a bad man, you know. And I know the exact moment. There's two moments. Anyway, how do we get there? Sam Rockwell. That's the power of like those supporting characters. Like he had two scenes. And I remembered him so specifically. His charisma, just like, it wasn't even stealing the film kind of scenes, but he was just embedded in my head. And the fact that that guy was Sam Rockwell. And I, you know what I mean? It's just, it says a lot about those kind of not flashy parts. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's where you make your bread and butter. That's where you learn. I think there's so much value in supporting actors who are more experienced than you. However old they might be, like I've worked with younger actors with way more experience than me. I think we're always constantly in an exchange of skill and creativity and talent and, you know, all those things that make up who we are. Mm. So I think it's really exciting to kind of get any job, to be honest. I'm mostly just glad to be working. And at the moment, like I'm working on an ensemble piece, so it's not really that there's a lead and a supporting lead or anything like that. But that in itself is such a, you used the word family earlier on about you guys who like to kind of have collaborated with one another a lot. And I think an ensemble piece of any kind feels very familial. Actually, when I was watching the trailer for The Payday, maybe it's because I know a bunch of you, but there's something about it that just feels very warm and like familiar and familial. I don't know what the experience was like shooting it, but there's something about the way you guys seem to be just enjoying yourself. And obviously that it's a kind of a comedy as well. There's something about it that just feels really gorgeous in a way that, you know, them big blockbusters and even like a lot of TV shows don't always feel that way to me. Or often, in fact, you can kind of feel like the barrier of the budget or the production quality or whatever it is. And I mean, that's not to say that this is not a great production quality because Sam Bradford is extraordinary at,
at what he does and Price Smart. I remember The Few. That's still one of my favourite things I've ever watched, you know, this superheroes in London, and it's just you and Sam Benjamin running around with superpower. That's like the most phenomenal thing I've ever seen. And there were such little bite-sized episodes. Mm. Anyway, I'm going off tangent now.
That's another situation where Sam Benjamin wrote a character that wasn't similar to Big Al. I wasn't supposed to play Christian. It was supposed to be another actor.
Oh.
And I don't think I was the first choice for Big Al. I mean, I know Sam Benjamin. I was definitely his first choice for Big Al. But like, but it's one of those things, again, where Sam, for me, in The Few with Christian, he wrote the most compelling, interesting character. And I don't think he realized that he... Again, I think he wrote the best character in Christian. And I love Christian to this day. I just think there's so much depth. And it was bite-sized episodes. And you only get to see the flashy stuff. But he gave me like a rough backstory. But then I went deep with it because that's what I'm interested in doing. Like, that's why I become an actor, because I don't like superficial. And at the time, I was working a lot with soldiers and people in the military. And Christian was a vet, you know. He served, and you know, you see some of the things when you talk and you hear stories when you're with these guys, and it just felt very, very, very real. And I know it's a weird thing to say about like a superhero thing, but and especially one that had like micro episodes and stuff. But yeah, it just felt like I got it. I understood. I got him. And I think there's something really tragic about that character that is really alluring.
Mm. I do think it's not always as easy to find yourself in a character. And so when you do come across something that really kind of speaks to you on that level that can't really be described in words, it's like there's something so visceral about it. Some kind of like soul connection, maybe. I don't know if I just sound a bit like woo.
No, I get it.
But that's such a beautiful thing. How have you found playing Lyndon King? Oh, my love, before we go on, I just wanted to ask very quickly if you might be able to hit the like button, the subscribe button, the follow button, the rate button, whatever the platform allows for. 5 stars would be so awesome and a cheeky review, but whatever you think is fair is great too. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Sorry to kill the vibe.
Lyndon King. The first thing, so I've always, from the time that I got the audition to start in the job, whenever I think of like people like, who's Lyndon King? So, because for a long while it was like I was finding that out as I was working, you know, because the turnover from me getting the job to us starting was very, well, it wasn't the longest time, put it that way.
Yeah.
So the question for a long time was who's Lyndon King? And the thing that keeps coming back to me is Isaac Hayes in Shaft, where he's like, he's a complicated man.
Yeah.
He is a complicated man. But again, with Lyndon, there's a lot to mine with a character like that. But again, Waterloo Road is an ensemble piece ultimately, because you follow so many different characters. This is the way I see it. There's that old quote where people say that, you know, as an actor, you are a defense attorney for your character. And I dig that. But my spin on that is like, when I play a character, I'm making a new best friend. And when I go there with a character, that's my man. Do you know what I mean? I get territorial. I'm like, I will fight someone for this guy. And he's just, cause he's my man. That's my man. Like, and he may do some things that you may not like. And he may do some things that I don't like. But that's my man. So I've got to have his back. So I don't even know if I'm answering your question.
I think you are. Because I think what I was getting at was, I think with things that are kind of homegrown, shall we say, or like grassroots, like the stuff that you guys make, the Few, the Payday, that film is not going to come to either of our heads, is it? The one that's on...
Double Cross.
Double Cross! Double Cross. My God, Sam. Please don't disown us.
Yeah. In fairness, we weren't in it, so it's okay.
True that. But when I think about those kinds of things, like they, you can, I think you do have a lot more license to insert yourself in a way that does give you that really strong kind of bond with that character, whether that's because they are you or because they're your boy, as you say. But when you take on a character on behalf of a big production, like Waterloo Road, like Casualty, like any of them, I think sometimes you can feel a bit of pressure to try and figure out how to, like, quote unquote, get it right.
I'm smiling because, and I don't mind saying this, and it may make me sound like a bit of an a-hole, but like, absolutely not.
Good.
Absolutely not. Like, the same, I've been, don't get me wrong, and it's not just me, you know, being the juggernaut and smashing through walls and be like, I'm going to have it my way or whatever. I've been really, really fortunate to be on a show like this that has this much scope, and for our executive producer, Cameron Roach, and producer, Lindsay Williams, to really, like, we were working for like about a month, and they kind of came to me and they were like, we really want you to really put, basically they gave me the reins of the character. Yeah. And so I, at no point have I ever felt like I needed to do something to appease anybody else. And to be honest with you, like, you know, I had that same kind of mentality when it came to leaving university and starting my career. It's like, I'm selfish and I will do what I want to do. And, you know, you hired me for a reason. And so I, from very early on in this process, I took full ownership of this character. And, you don't get me wrong, we've had conversations and been like, okay, what about this? And they're like, well, we kind of da da da. And there's sometimes where my short-sightedness would be like, no, this needs to happen because it's, we're telling a story. It's not the Lyndon King show, it's Waterloo Road. And so I'm like, okay, touche, I'll take that. But no, absolutely not. Like, when you see, Lyndon's not me, Christian's not me, Big Al's not me. All these people aren't me. And so maybe some points where we have some connective tissue, but they are other people. But as the defense attorney, as my boys, I need to represent them in the best way I possibly can. And again, I'm so fortunate that the execs and the producers have allowed me to do that, because when people watch the show, I can stand by every take.
And that's it.
I've never done a single take where I've regretted it and go back to the monitor and say, can we do it again? Because in my head, it's like this, between action and cut, this is where this guy needs to live. And there's no second guessing it. And how I present this guy needs to resonate. And so therefore, yeah, let's go. Let's do it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think it's a really... I'm so glad that you were able to have that experience.
Also, for anyone who's listening to this, and any like young actors who hear what I'm saying, they get like, maybe they're like, ooh, and they get some more romantic idea of it. It's like, I'm saying that I'm still colouring in the lines.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm not trying to make this the Lyndon King show or the Vincent Jerome show. I have no interest in that. The only thing that I've been given to take care of is this particular element of the story, which resides in this guy. Okay. So that's all I have to, the producers and the story producers and the writers, and they have to juggle all of these different characters with all of these different voices. So I have a very, comparatively, my responsibility is quite small, because I only have to worry about this guy. But I'm always mindful to be an actor and serve the story. And because I have had all this time with this guy, there may be things, that little nuances that I can bring in that aren't on the page, but will still serve the story, but maybe bring a couple more shades that maybe the writers weren't expecting or haven't thought about, because they have all these other things to worry about. So again, I don't want it to sound like, you know, I'm going in bigger than Ben-Hur, booting down doors and being like, I'm doing it my way. You guys can get lost. I'm not.
Imagine.
But I'm literally, I'm doing my job. And my job is to tell a story, but also my job is to serve the character. And those two things need to marry up.
Absolutely. I always say to people, your only job really, and everything else falls into the what or the why you do it, but your only job really is to transform. That's literally all you're being paid to transform into somebody else, because mm-hmm. most people can't do that. And there were other people that probably could have done it, but they would have done a different job. They would have transformed into something else. But your job is to transform into this version of Lyndon King or this version of Tina Mollett or whatever it is.
Let me double down on that. And I'm not saying, anyone listening, I'm not saying that this is what you should do. But so I got, so the audition came up, okay. I'd heard of the show. I hadn't really watched it before. And I was like, okay, Lyndon King, blah, blah, blah. I didn't know how big the part was. Didn't know what the commitment was. Didn't know any of that. I was just like, oh, great. Yeah. You know, it's just cool. Yeah, great. So I did. So they asked me to, they wanted the Northern accent because, you know, it's set in Manchester. And you know, I think that, I don't think it's a secret that they want it to be a very Northern show. And so it was like Manchester accent. And I'm good with accents, but I've never done a Manchester accent in my life. And I was like, okay. And because I've got friends from Leeds, I did Lyndon in a Leeds accent. And I did about two scenes, and I did about five takes of each scene, you know. And I watched them back, and I was like, this doesn't work. Like, this isn't how I want the character to sound. And keep in mind, I've got like a day and a half maybe to get this tape back to them. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to roll the dice. And I haven't got the job, so I've got nothing to lose. So I was like, if they want a version of this character, if they want me to do a version of the character, I'm going to give my version of the character. And my version of the character has a London accent.
Stunning.
And I did it. And then I was like, cool. You know, as you do as an actor, you kind of do it and you forget about it. I do anyway, because I'm just like, I can drive myself crazy with it. Then I hear I got a recall. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And they didn't ask me to change my accent. Got the job. Still didn't ask me to change my accent. And I was like, cool. So in my head, that was a situation where I was like, this is what I have to offer. This is, you've given me a brief, and this is how I'm going to manifest that brief. And if this isn't what you want, that's perfectly fine. It's okay. Because it's an offer. I'm offering you this thing, but this is how I'm going to do it. And, you know, as we speak, you know, Lyndon King is, he lives in Manchester and has done for years, but, you know, he's from Enns, isn't it? He's from Harlesden.
Gang, gang.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I was very particular about that. He, you know, because of the backstory they wrote. Initially, he was supposed to be, I don't know how much of this I'm allowed to say, but this isn't spoilers for the show. Initially, they wanted him to be from Mossad. And I was like, okay, so if he's from Mossad, he's a certain kind of brother. Do you know what I mean? He's had a certain kind of trajectory to get him to this point. So in my head, because I now had the job, I was like, and I'm not being asked to do a different accent, I was like, he can't really be from Mossad.
Yeah,
because that wouldn't work. You know what I mean? Like, that's almost offensive to the man named Mossad. You know what I mean? So we had me and the writers went back and forth and so on and so forth and let it rest, and it came back to it and so on and so forth. And I was just like, yeah, boom. He's, you know what I mean? I wrote it in a, and this is not me. This isn't my life, but it's, I think about friends and family and all the rest of that. And I was like, right, okay, so he's born in Central Middlesex Hospital, and he was raised on Stonebridge Estate, and da 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 da. And things that like would be a version of what they wanted, but it's something that I know to be real. Do you know what I mean? Like something that when I was thinking about this, it's like I can see Central Middlesex Hospital in my head. I can see Stonebridge Estate. You know what I mean? I can see the North Circular just down there. Do you know what I mean? Like I can see everything because I'm from Northwest London, and it's just that, I don't know. I think ownership is important, and people like authenticity.
Absolutely, they do. And you do have to roll the dice sometimes. Sometimes I'm working on auditions with people and they're like, oh, this line is just, I can't get my mouth around it. And I'm like, you know what? If you're not changing the meaning of the sentence and you're not changing the story, you've got to be very careful with this. But I think a word or two here or there, it's not a memory test. Just get the line out in a way that feels authentic, because it's more important than you that you give a good performance, then you get it bang on, word perfect. I think if you're doing a classic, don't even touch that. Don't touch
Absolutely.
That. Learn the lines.
Learn the lines. Yeah.
But for like contemporary television, contemporary film, generally speaking, I wouldn't say that for period, but generally speaking, I think you've got to find a way to deliver the thing that's going to make you shine without telling them that they're bad writers or telling them that you can do it better somehow. You know what I mean? Like, to be arrogant with it. But yeah, ownership is really important. It's really important.
Yeah. As I said, it's an offer. You know what I mean? Because they could just be like, no, we don't want to do that. And I'm like, okay, cool.
And more time, they will.
it's so in my head, I'm just like, okay, you don't want to do that. I'll just wait to hear from you then. I'll see what you guys do.
Yeah.
And then we'll roll with it and it's cool. Because ultimately, like, a lot of the time, I'm quite mercenary when it comes to acting. Like,
how do you mean?
In a sense that I get hired to do a job. So I'm going to come in, I'm going to do the best job I possibly can. I'm going to take the shot and then I'm going to go. Because we're carny people. We're carnival people. You know what I mean? Like, we're circus people. We come in and, you know, we're vagabonds in a way. Do you know what I mean? We come in and we do a thing and then that ends and then we go and do something else. And it's just the nature of how it is. Just rolling with it. So.
We're weirdos. But I really want more people to hear from more people that you're hired for a reason. Hired to bring yourself, your interpretation, yes, there are parameters, of course. But even on a job as big as Waterloo Road, you have the freedom to take those reins in both hands and kind of run with it. You'll obviously be stopped if and when you're going too far.
Absolutely.
But I think it's important for people to hear from as many people as possible about their experience of getting to fulfill something, especially on what is arguably your biggest job to date.
I mean, it's hard to say because obviously people will look at my CV and they'll see like Wonder Woman, they'll see Transformers and stuff. But at the same time, you know, I was a bit playing there. You know what I mean? It's like, I wasn't carrying storylines or I wasn't showing any kind of skill or talent or whatever you want to call it. So I guess so. This is the way I see it is Waterloo Road is an introduction to millions of people. And I know millions of people will watch it. And that's not me being arrogant. It's just the fact that it did something crazy like 48.2 million views during the pandemic. Do you know what I mean? So that's like, so people are watching. And I'm always surprised about how many people come out the woodwork and say they're fans. My nephew, literally, like, I've been doing this job for months and I saw him, I saw him this week, but I saw him like a month ago before that. And he was like, yeah, I used to watch it. And I was like, you're just telling me this now. But
I'm a fan. I love Waterloo.
Oh, for real?
Yeah,
for real?
Okay, I really
that's
loved
good.
It.
I think I got to plug the show because I'm really proud. I've only seen the first two episodes at this point, and I'm really proud of what we did. I'm really proud of what we've done. It's a little bit like the old one, but it's kind of updated. It's not like a reboot, but it's just different. It's a different animal. And I think there's a level of, and this is no disrespect to the old one, I think there's a level of sophistication that in this one that maybe the old episodes didn't have as much. Because we live in, obviously, we've always lived in a complicated world, but the world's a lot smaller now and people's voices are a lot louder. So it makes things even more complicated. But yeah, sorry, can I just go back to something you were saying about family and like that familiar kind of thing?
Yes, go for it.
So the thing you were talking about, saying about with the payday, and just that kind of having fun and the familiar kind of element of it. I really do believe you'll get that with this show. Everyone is just so lovely. Like, there's no, there's that saying, it's like, if I can't remember, is it like, if there's no assholes in the room, then it's you or something like that. I don't know. I'm butchering that quote.
That's the saying, that is it.
But yeah, and it's like, I mean, I hope it's not me. Everybody seems to be quite nice to me. So, but everybody's lovely. Everybody's lovely. And it's just, it really is just a good vibe. Everybody comes in to do their best work. No one, as far as I'm aware, is there to pick up a check. Everybody really wants to make the best show they can. We spoke about lead actors and supporting actors before, but one of the things that I've learned on this job, and especially learning it from Angela Griffin, who Angela Griffin doesn't like compliments, but Angela Griffin's amazing. Like, she's an amazing, amazing woman. She's so generous. She's so lovely. She's got like a 30-year career. Do you know what I mean? Like, she ain't no slouch. And she's so generous with her time and her knowledge. And she's the lead. She's the leader. And one thing I've learned about being the lead in something from her and just being number three in a call sheet is people like to think about glitz and glamour and having your names in and all this kind of stuff. And actually, no, what being a leader is means you set an example. You have a responsibility to the people around you. You have a response. You don't, I mean, well, maybe I'm being a bit too deep with it, but like in my head, being a leader of something or being a lead is you set the tone for the whole set. Do you know what I mean? Like you being a leader isn't about throwing your weight around and just being like, I'm the biggest, baddest person on this set and everybody needs to listen to me and everybody. No, it's about you have a responsibility to the people around you. And so when I think about the idea of being a lead actor, that's what comes to my head. And again, partly is that my own kind of exploration into that experience, but also looking at about how Ange moves. She's a gift, man. I keep telling her that, but she's like, shut up. And I'm just like, but yeah, she's an absolute gift. And all the cast are like, I look forward to having scenes with people that I haven't had scenes with yet. And I hope and I believe you will feel that when you watch the show.
That's beautiful, man. I'm so excited for it to come back out. I can't tell you how much I used to love Whartley Road. And from the way you've described it, how it's graduated into what you guys have made, it just sounds really exciting. Mm. And I can't wait to meet Lyndon King and find out all about him and watch him go on his journey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting to see what people's opinions are. Actually, I don't know. I don't know. Okay, so here's a question for you. When you were on Casualty, like, did you watch what people were saying? I'm not saying you went in the comments, because I don't touch the comments. Like, I don't touch the comments. I have people telling me what's in the comments. I'm like, I didn't ask. Please don't.
I didn't ask.
but like, for you, was it made very clear how people felt about that character?
Yeah, from the very beginning. So in the beginning, Tina was a goodie. She was just this cute little nurse who'd come in and you know, caught the eye of the heartthrob of of whole BED.
I mean, of course.
Of course.
I mean, Adele James. Ladies,
come on. No, I'm joking. Blushing so much. So, yeah, at the beginning I was just, I'd just come in and was basically just like this kind of sweet woman who very sadly lost her brother in episode 2. Imagine they did that to me in episode 2. I was aware of people's feelings towards me because I got in the way of a very well-loved duo. So Charles Vernon and Amanda Meaning's character had been this on and off thing for about...
Gosh, shout out, Amanda.
Shout out, Amanda, yeah. Baby girl, because she directed some of Whartley Road, didn't she?
Yeah, yeah, she did. She did a block.
Yeah, yeah. I'm obsessed with her. She's amazing.
She's a boss. She's a boss.
She is a boss. You want to talk about leading a show? God damn. Yeah, she's incredible. But so they were in this on-off kind of love affair for years, about 4 or 5 years. And then along comes me, and people sent for me. People were like, why? I remember reading this one thing, because I did read the comments like an idiot. And I remember one guy being like, gosh, why is he interested in her? They better not kind of get together. She's not even a good actress. And I was like, oh, damn. Okay, go for Tina, but don't come for me.
This is why I don't mess with comments. Like, what's the saying? It's like, your opinion of me is none of my business.
None of my business. You know what I mean? And you know what? I read that and I was like, okay, we're done. We're done. Because I haven't even, like, I knew where the story was going. I knew it was going to become about abuse. And I knew how vicious she was going to become. Or at least I had an idea of how vicious she was going to become. In the end, we ended up going a lot further with it because it was going so well. And because we had that kind of freedom, again, within the parameters of what they needed to do in a certain amount of time. But yeah, I actually, when I started getting responses like that in the beginning, I decided I was going to take matters into my own hands. So I basically...
Did you Talib Kweli that thing? Just respond to everybody. Love you, Talib, but you go in.
I just decided to become more present on social media as myself. So I started posting a lot more. I started doing I would live tweet some of the episodes, and not to manipulate anybody because I wasn't being anybody other than who I was. I just didn't want the only image of me that existed on the internet to be Tina, because at that point, that was my biggest job in terms of the profile that it gave me. Being watched by that many people so consistently, and playing a role as big as it was, and the kind of airtime that gave me so consistently over a year long period. So yeah, I thought I've got to get ahead of this, man, because I can't be having people out here chatting nonsense, and people always will.
Yeah.
But I just thought, when it becomes personal, then I've got a problem with it. If you don't like the character, that's absolutely fine. I don't like her that much, but she was my girl. Like, I have to justify her behavior, and I will.
Yeah.
I don't think, obviously, in the real world, I'm not about that, but I've got a ride for her. I just have to. But I'm not her defense attorney, because I won't do it blindly. Which is, I do believe, what a defense attorney has to do.
Yeah.
You have to not know all the information so you can just, you know, barrage at the desired outcome. And so I really like what you were saying about kind of having your character's back. Like, I absolutely had Tina's back, but I also had my own.
Yeah.
Because I saw the way people move. And to be fair, I would say Waterloo Road is going to have a much bigger audience than Casualty does most weeks.
Okay, let's not start no infighting now. I mean, I don't know about the Casualty. I don't know, man.
We had a nice audience. We had a nice audience. You know, there's a good community around it. But
yeah,
I definitely think you'll be pulling in bigger ratings. So it's something maybe to think about.
I have, even to the point today where it's just like, before I came out, I need the haircut, and you know what I mean? My clippers were dying, and I was like, but part of me was like, because, you know, should I come as me, or should I be a little bit Lindsay? You know, when you go to audition and you're kind of like a little bit the character, a little bit you, so they can at least make the bridge. And I was like, nah, I can't be meeting Adele James looking all jacked up. So I had a little shave, my ball off my head. But I thought I'd dress in a comfy jumper, because this is one of the things as well. It's like, same as you, I want the opportunity to play other people. And Lyndon is so significantly Lyndon, and he's a slick one, boy. He's a slick one, and I don't want that thing where, and I know it's going to happen, people see me in the street, I'm drinking my coffee or I'm doing whatever I'm doing, and people see me looking like just cash, and they'd be like, where's your suit? Why aren't you wearing them nice shoes you like to wear in the show? And I'm just like, I'm just me, you know?
I'm dead.
You know what I mean? I'm in my docks. I mean, and my jeans chilling. So for me, again, it's that thing of like, but also me and Lyndon are different. When you watch it, you'll see that. Like, you'll see we're different guys. And it is that thing of, we are actors and, you know, but also I know that doesn't matter to some people. I don't know about your family, but like, my mum and sister and aunts and uncles and all the rest of them, they're the people to kind of cuss the TV. Mm-hmm. Back in the day in Coronation Street, there was a character called Richard. And Richard was he was a bad one. Yeah.
I remember
my mum. And my mum's quite like a meek, quiet person. Do you know what I mean? But she can give some lip when she needs to. But like, I remember her cussing off Richard. And I remember the actor came on this morning and she was cussing off Richard. And I was thinking to myself, Mum, you're smarter than this, man. Come on, Mum. Come on now.
People lose themselves on the TV. It's like, mad.
This is what I'm saying. And I think about so many of the other characters, like from EastEnders, and so many characters that are just actors who are known. Who was that guy, the Scottish actor, who was in an abusive relationship with Little Mo? Is that, am I remembering right, in EastEnders?
With Little Mo?
Was it Little Mo? No, it wasn't Little Mo. It was somebody. He was in an abusive relationship with somebody. And man, I felt for the brother, because I was like, you must get harassed in the street, man.
Yeah, people lose their minds.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to someone the other day about, did you ever watch Game of Thrones?
I tried watching. Now, with people going to come for me now. Right. If you want to come for me about Game of Thrones, come. I don't care.
Don't worry, people. I've got him. As soon as we go off air, he's going
to... I tried three times, yeah? I tried three times to watch the first series. I got through it for Jason Momoa. But for me, and I'm sorry to bring the tone down for your audience, but it's like, there was just too many old stuffy people talking, and there was too much rape. And I'm sorry. I was just like, I'm not here for it. I'm sorry. Nah, man.
totally justified. I'm going to go full circle and just say I've never watched it either. But nice. We were talking about this character. We were talking about this character called Joffrey. I think it was Joffrey Baratheon or maybe Lannister. No,
the thing with Game of Thrones, you don't have to watch it to know who the characters are.
Joffrey.
Yeah, yeah, I know
Joffrey. The most evil little boy who ever existed. Yeah. In fact, 100% the worst villain of the entire 6-7 series, however many seasons it was. But we were talking the other day about the fact that that character ruined that guy's life. I can't remember the actor's name.
Yeah, he stopped acting, didn't he?
Stopped acting. He was being bullied, like, horrendously. And it really is, like, some people do not know how to separate the actor from the acting. And so I guess my method or what I'd hoped to do by being more present, which actually I really didn't want to do because I don't like being on social media. I don't enjoy it. I feel this weird push and pull between like being really open with people and not wanting to tell anybody anything. It's a thing I war with a lot. But the reason I wanted to get ahead of it, and I'm glad I did, was because it encouraged people to talk about the acting and not about me as a human being doing the acting. You know, people made comments about the performances of both mine and Charles and whoever else was involved in the storyline. But it started to become less about the way I looked, the you know, all these arbitrary things that actually had no bearing on the storyline whatsoever. And people really started to hone in on the importance of that storyline and what that meant. And for me, that was such an important kind of turning point in the way that people were discussing Tina and you know, that whole thing on social media, because I had this little note on my dressing room mirror that said, "You're here to save even one person's life," because there were some days where I was like, oh God, am I really going to go out there again and just be awful again? And, you know, they cut the camera and you look around and people are looking at you like you're the scum of the earth. And I think that's because you've done a good job, but even still it hurts, you know, it doesn't feel nice. And so that little thing above my dressing room mirror always reminded me of why I was here, and getting ahead of it kind of allowed me also to fulfill that mission, I suppose, if that made any sense at all.
No, that makes absolute sense. And you need to kind of, I think, like, what we do is like, the job is hard, but also the lifestyle's hard. If people in this industry, if actors get to act 95% of the time, then they live an extremely blessed existence. You know what I mean? We spend a lot of time, you know, not knowing things and not knowing what, you know, how we're going to pay next month's rent or not knowing when the next job's going to come through or whatever. And I think little things like that, just reminding yourself at different points why you're doing a thing is important, you know, and especially something when you're dealing with a character that is as toxic as that, you kind of do need to have that distance, but then distance will always give you perspective. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't, if something's like in your face like that and you can't see anything else, like, you're not gonna be able to see it as if it was far away, and you'd be able to view it from a safe distance. So stuff like that is important, you know. I'm constantly trying to learn things like that. And again, Lyndon's not a toxic character in the same way. Not at all, actually. Like, don't get me wrong, I reckon that in the first couple of episodes people aren't going to like him, but that's just because he's a very strong personality. But you need to take care of yourself, and however you do that is however you do that, isn't it?
Absolutely. I would recommend staying away from the comments, though.
Oh yeah, no, I don't mess with the comments, man. Like, I don't, like, I had, like, I think after we did the announcement, the pass the phone announcement on, I was in work the next week, and a couple of the young lads, I say lads because I'm up in Manchester all the time, a couple of the young boys were like, "Yo, did you read the comments on Facebook?" I said, "I'm not on Facebook." "Did you read the comments on Instagram?" "Nope." And it's just like, and the comments that they were telling me about were extremely complimentary. And I was like, that's nice, but I don't care if they're complimentary. I'm not messing with the comments. Like, I, you know, if people like Lyndon or they like me or anything, that's great. And if they don't, that's great too, you know, but I can't be, man, it's taken me so long to get to this place that I can't be messing with that them things there, man. It's like, come on.
Yeah, it's a very slippery slope. And you fall from grace very fast that way.
Yeah.
I learned going the wrong way around. But yeah, I think that's very wise. Teach me your ways. I'm going to move on to the request for the next guest, if I may. The question that has come through for you, my dear, is what is the best and or worst advice you've received about navigating the industry? You can answer both. You can answer one. It's totally up to you.
I think the best advice I've ever been given was from Paulette Randall, MBE. She hates when I call her that. But Paulette Randall, who, have you worked with Paulette?
I have not.
Paulette is a dream. She is amazing. Anyway, so Paulette, me and Paulette were doing a play, and I had this big monologue in the play, and she was like, well, I did it. And then she's like, okay, we're going to do it again. And then her note was, you're telling this story, so tell the story how you want to tell it. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay, right. And so it just dawned on me. It was, and I've kind of taken that, and it may be about pace. It may be about stressing things that really meant something to me or the character or whatever it was. But it was one of those things about, I saw it as ownership. And so I've taken that idea of like, this is my life. And, you know, I have to be kind of not in control, but responsible for it. And the decisions I make need to be thoughtful or thought out. And it's just like, just take ownership of what you're doing and yourself. And I know that wasn't, that note that she gave was more about that monologue, but I've kind of taken it and just expanded on it because I think it's really useful.
Yeah, and it's like a lot of what we've talked about today, ownership.
Yeah.
Make the thing yours somehow, or don't shy away from the fact that it's yours.
Absolutely. And the worst bit of advice I've ever been given was from someone who used to run workshops that I used to go to. And I'm still in contact with that person. And that person was like, you will never get anywhere if you don't go to drama school. I carried that around my neck for years, not knowing how much that bunned me. Because I didn't go to conventional drama school. I went to university. And I carried that like a weight around my neck. And it was, but at the same time, it took me so long. It took me so long to realize what a crock. Because I had done plays with people who would, oh, my boy went to Drama Center. My boy went to RADA. My boy went to Mountview, or went to Guildhall, or went to Lambda. And then it took me so long to realize like, oh, but guess what? We're all in the same room.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so I think stuff like that is BS. And I don't check for it. And that's literally the worst advice as far as my career I've ever been given.
Yeah, I completely relate because I've been given that advice quite a few times. And I've spoken to a lot of actors who haven't gone to drama school yet, might not ever go, about their fear of not going to drama school. And I'm working right now in a room. Every single person in that room, including everybody on the crew, went to drama school. I'm the only person that didn't go, but I'm no less valued or valuable. Absolutely. In that space. And yeah, it annoys me to no end that people still say that to actors.
Yeah. But let me caveat that with this. I'm not saying don't educate yourself on the thing you want to do.
Agreed.
Because that's important. This is the reason I didn't go to drama school, is because I didn't know anybody who went to drama school. I don't have any family or friends that went to drama school. I was literally the only person in my circle who was taking the route I was taking. So in my head, I didn't go to drama school because in my head, that's for rich people. And I'm not doing them things there. But I know I can get a student loan. So I didn't know about grants and loans and all the other things that drama schools offer. So I did a course at university, a 3-year course at London Metropolitan University. And because I knew if I was going to take this thing seriously, I needed to get better. And I needed to learn, and I need to apply myself in a place that would facilitate that learning. also there's an element of like sometimes, like when you said you were talking about playing Tina, educating yourself in regards to the craft of acting can be a lifesaver, because you could then, you will then know how to kind of extradite yourself from characters who may not be the nicest people in the world, or who have gone through a certain amount of trauma, or, you know what I mean? Because we do carry that with us. Mm-hmm. So again, even though that's the biggest pile of doo-doo I've ever been told, I do not for one second downplay the importance of education.
Absolutely. Training, important. Drama school, not necessarily. It depends on the person. Couldn't have done Tina without training. I'm sure you couldn't have done half the things you've done without some form of education and training. Mm. And then, of course, the rest you learn on the job.
Absolutely. That's really good training. That's like learning on the job is...
the best training.
Yeah, 100%.
Please, could you share a request for the next guest?
My question for the next guest is... has there ever been a time where you've chosen credibility over common sense? And if so, what is that time?
Oh, one interesting question. Oh, that's got the cogs turning. Ooh, I can't wait to hear the person's answer.
Yeah. I was just racking my brains and I was like, what would I really want to hear? You know, as a fan of the show, so hopefully that will, it'd be really bad if they were like, nah, that's never happened.
Never. I'm perfect.
Like, no. All my decisions are the right ones.
Amazing. Yeah. Lovely. And then my final question for you before I let you go off on your merry way is, what is your self-care intention for the upcoming, well, for the foreseeable future?
My self-care intention for the foreseeable future is just to take a breath and just enjoy, man. Like, just really, I'm really, really bad at putting unnecessary pressure on myself and a lot of, giving myself a lot of negative self-talk. And I'm realizing that the next few weeks and months is exciting, man. Like, it's exciting. I'm in a situation that, like, so many actors would die to be in, you know what I mean? And it's just one of those things where, yes, with every job, there's going to be stresses and there's going to be things that will bother you. And there's, you know, you might be in your feelings certain days, but like my self-care thing is just take a breath, just take a step back and just breathe it in, man. Like, just enjoy it. Because it's important. I don't do it enough.
Oh, I love that for you. That's so lovely. And actually, I think I might well steal that for my own, to be honest, because we're coming into the last couple of weeks of my tour. And you know what these things are like, man. You blink and it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's over. And yeah. Then you're like, oh, why wasn't I present enough? And da-da-da, you know, and this is a really exciting time for you. You know, you're going to be doing loads of press, I'm sure. And mm-hmm. then it will air. I can't wait for the air date to be released. Trust me when I say I'll be plugging it all over the shop. But this is such an important moment in this journey. You've done arguably the hardest bit, which is the filming. And now you're going into a very different phase of that. And that's so exciting. And I think that's such a beautiful way to look after yourself in that time. And kind of, that's such a beautiful method of self-preservation. So I love that for you. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you.
Mate, thank you so much for coming on. Honestly, I've had such a lovely chat with you and we could have chatted for hours more, I'm sure. Yeah. But I must let you go. But thank you so much for coming on.
I mean, I don't know people who return to the podcast, but I'd like to. I mean, I'm going to put it out there. You tend to be like one and done and just send people on their way. I mean, bye, baby.
At this point, I think I've only had a few guests on, but I already am in talks with someone about coming back on.
Right.
So you know what? Put your name on that list.
I'll absolutely have you back. Yeah.
There's much more to talk about.
Yeah, there will be. Yeah.
Oh, no, but bless you. Thank you so much. Lots of love to you, my darling. And I'm going to sign off.